Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CracksSidewalks.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Kansas City Chiefs podcast, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CracksSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you, and wow, Phil, what a weekend, eh?
Yeah. For most of our interests, yes.
So, you know, we joked on the pod last week that if somehow Marquette got two wins this past week, it would be a wild 17-drink minimum podcast. What we did not count on was A, that actually happening, and B, the Kansas City Chiefs playing one of the greatest playoff games I have ever seen in my life just before we recorded this podcast. Yeah, we're recording it on Sunday night, and yeah, I'm flying a bit high. I know football may be a sensitive subject for many of you out there because it did not go as well for all the home teams this weekend. But, Phil, I am just flying high right now.
Yeah, I mean, everything is coming up Joseph, and I'm here for it because at least I get the tailwind with Marquette. That's really the thing that's most important, A, to this podcast audience, and B, to me, because I'm ready to move on from football. Some things happened in my football fandom that I just as soon leave behind, and I'm ready to move forward in this exciting Marquette basketball season, which, oh my God, we're good. Like, we're good, good.
Like, legit good. How good? We're going to get into that. As much as I would like to talk, like, for about 30 minutes about Patrick Mahomes.
You can find Joe's Kansas City podcast at Chiefs Kingdom.
Yeah, maybe I'll hook up with Ben Snyder over there at Anonymous Eagle, and we'll do, like, a offbeat, like, you know, Anonymous Eagle / Scrambled Eggs Chiefs one-off podcast.
I'm surprised the two of you don't have, like, some random Twitter space going for Kansas City Chiefs who are also Marquette fans.
Yeah, you know, don't tempt me. I might actually hang up and do that right now. But let's talk about what happened with Marquette basketball this past week. And you know, because the win against Xavier on Sunday is definitely fresh in our mind. But you know, just the week as a whole, Phil, just to come out of this week with two wins, which going into this seven-game gauntlet, we hoped they would somehow find a way to scratch out two wins, and they've started 3-0. But they start this week with their first ever win at Finneran Pavilion. An unbelievable performance from the team in that arena. Justin Lewis hits the big shot late. Greg Elliott, hit some big shots in that game. Where do you want to start on this week?
I think it's just the overall. I think we have to start with Villanova. I mean, the Xavier game was a great win and kind of a solid win throughout with some great performances, but that Villanova win was totally unexpected, and I think we just have to start with that game and kind of like how unbelievable it was that, you know, Marquette was the first team to win at Finneran since 2018, not named Villanova, and then the first Big East team since like 2012. Like that result is just mind-boggling to me to this day.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, just the poise to go in that place when on a day when Villanova was retiring Josh Hart's jersey, and there were points in the game where even late in the game, Villanova, I want to say, was up 9 with how many, like, a couple minutes left to go, 3-4 minutes left, and you thought, okay, well, Villanova's going to pull away. Is Marquette even going to cover? And then, boom, they hit a shot there, get a stop, and all of a sudden, holy crap, we got the lead. And then, like, this team is maturing before our eyes, and they don't get rattled in tough spots. Justin Lewis's poise and leadership continues to show, and all the guys have kind of settled into their roles, and they're all playing them exactly the way Shaka wants them to play, and everybody's contributing in their own little way, and in that Villanova game especially, they're poised late in the game to not give up, even when it looked like Villanova was pulling away, and just to knock down a few big shots. Greg Elliott had just a massive one win, just like one of those, no, 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 oh yeah, what a shot.
Yeah.
And
he had a couple of those, though, off the inbound, yeah, and then off the rebound, where he just gathered the rebound and went up for the shot at the same time and hit a three that was just phenomenal. But I agree with you. One of the things that's crazy to me, and this bleeds over to the Xavier game, you know, and I think the Boulevard Wheats and the Kansas City game are blowing your memory a little bit. Marquette trailed by 9 with about 10 minutes to go in the second half. But Marquette, like with 9 minutes left in the game, went on an 11-3 run against Villanova. They won the game on an 11-3 run in the last 9 minutes. And then against Xavier, they won on a 27-11 run in the last 12 minutes of the game. Like, that is the offense has been adequate to above average. The defense has just been redonkulous in the last 10 to 15 minutes of games. Like, they are, I don't want to say elite because I feel like we're maybe not quite there, but it's starting to feel elite-ish.
Yeah, I mean, like, so we're recording this on Sunday night, so we haven't seen the new AP poll, which comes out on Monday, but we are assuming that Marquette will be ranked when that comes out on Monday. So it's like, kind of getting way up there. You know, we joked a few weeks ago about Providence getting way too high up there and getting the whole nosebleed philosophy. Like, okay, that's a little too high. And Marquette being ranked just seems crazy. Like, are they that good? Are they top 25 in the nation good? They sure have been playing like it lately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I made a joke of it last week, the Wojo cleanse. I think it really is a bit of a cleanse. Like, I think we have to recapture our own, like, belief in ourselves. This is a team. These aren't fluke victories. Yes, like, are they expected to win these types of games? No, but it's not like Marquette is doing weird things to win these games. Marquette is playing outstanding defense most of the game, playing good offense most of the games, turning teams over, and not making mistakes. So it is a sustainable performance. It's not this fluky, hey, you know, Villanova was way off, you know, shooting, and it had nothing to do with our defense. They just shot poorly. They had open looks, but shot poorly, and we won, right? They're not fluky victories. And so I think we need to come to terms with, I think this team is good. Like, I think we're ahead of schedule for the rebuild, for sure.
Oh, I don't think there's a doubt about it. Because I think you and I have been holding back all year of saying, let's raise expectations. This is a tournament team. Say, like, you know, they get hot here. Say, oh, that was a nice win. Well, let's see what happens. Yeah, well, that was a good win there. But let's see what happens over the next few games. I'm kind of ready to move the needle just a little bit. To the point where I say that them not making the tournament would be a disappointment right now, the way they've been playing lately, because they're playing with house money now over these next four games, where even if they, you know, if they lose them all, they still should be in decent shape to make the tournament. But if they get another win in these next four, I would dare say they are a stone-cold lock to be in the tournament.
I think at this point, again, they've got 8 games to go. As long as they go, I don't know, 500, excuse me, they're in, right? Like, I got to say, I think they're a lock to get in.
Yeah, you look at the numbers on KenPom with Marquette. We, you know, said before the season it would be nice if Shaka could continue his streak of having a top 40 defense every year, which he has every year since his third year at VCU. Marquette right now is the number 23 defense on KenPom. And, like, there's no small sample size about that. I mean, we are 20 games into the season at this point. They are legitimately one of the top 25 defenses in the country right now, the way they've been playing. And the offense is much better than we thought it would be. It's ranked, at the moment we're recording this, 67th in the nation. So a top 25 defense and a top 70 offense, I mean, that's pretty salty. I mean, that is good. I mean, that'll get you in the tournament. That'll give you a chance to win a tournament game, maybe. They are just, you know, I don't think there's anything fluky about it, like you were saying, Phil. I mean, they've been grinding out these wins and doing it in impressive fashion. It's not like they're getting lucky calls or guys are getting fouled out or ejected or not available and for the other teams, and Marquette's just capitalizing on that. They're just grinding out tough wins and beating these teams, ranked teams, and starting to believe, Phil.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, because even the games where you say, hey, you know, they beat Providence without A.J. Reeves. Okay, great. But I don't think A.J. Reeves is a an extra 32 points a game guy, right? Like, I don't think he swings that game by 32 points or 33 points actually for Providence to win, right? So, like, Seton Hall had all their players. DePaul's DePaul, right? And they don't have, that Georgetown or the DePaul game could easily have been trap games given everything else coming up. And both of them, there were 4, maybe 8 minute segments in both of those games where Marquette let both of those teams back in a little bit. But, they are, for all intents and purposes, even if they get down 6, 7, 8, 9 points, they are right back in it, and they're clamping down on defense and letting the offense, get what it's going to get. And it's just crazy. And that Villanova game that was easily a game where the wheels could have fallen off, where Villanova was up 9 points and was really starting to pull away a little bit. And Cam Jones and Stevie Mitchell and Oso Iguodaro were playing young, right? They were committing silly fouls and, committing silly turnovers. And you thought, well, hey, we had a good run here. And then, Shaka called a fortunate timeout and then, really basically said, all right, we've got five guys. They're just going to be out there and they're going to clamp down on defense and we're going to hope the offense can catch us up. And boy, howdy did they. And Justin Lewis, like that is a heck of a coming out party, right? Like he was always getting a little bit of under the radar national attention, but oh boy, that game against Villanova should have gotten him a lot of attention.
Yeah, 21 points, including the big shot to win it, 7 rebounds, just some confident takes to the basket right in that game. When Marquette needed a basket, Justin Lewis put the team on his back, said, look, we're going to win this freaking game, and I'm going to lead you there. And, yeah, they got on the ball, and he got in the paint, got some tough baskets late, and then, of course, he hit the big one to win it in a very tough environment where Marquette had never previously won, and very few Big East teams have. So, yeah, it just Marquette Twitter just exploded that night. It was just there was a really fun Twitter space that Patrick Leary over Anonymous Eagle hosted. A lot of fans chiming in, sharing their takes on the team, and just the buzz and excitement around the team really kind of hit a fever pitch that night. And the best part about it was they were able to parlay into another win on Sunday.
Yeah.
We've kind of braced over the years for letdowns after big wins. Hasn't happened during this recent stretch here because they go out and get that big win, then they come home and get another big win. The Xavier game, and Marquette led for most of that game. Marquette was actually an underdog in Vegas and on KenPom heading in. And really, for the most part, controlled it start to finish. I mean, Xavier, I want to say, led by as many as 4 in the game. I don't know if they ever got a lead bigger than that.
No, they didn't get anything bigger than 4.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't say, Marquette didn't necessarily lead start to finish, but there was never a point on Sunday where I thought the game was getting away from them. Or, really, the entire game thought Marquette was going to win. And it was really never in doubt for me.
Yeah. No, It was one of those where you could see when Xavier kind of came back and made a run, where you could see Marquette kind of going, that's on us. It wasn't like Xavier was doing amazing things or was confounding Marquette. It was more of, Marquette, either making mental errors or being fatigued, because that game was crazy. There was at least 3 times where, I don't know, play continued for 5-6 minutes straight with no out of bound, with no stoppages in play or timeouts, TV timeouts or anything like that. And there was, I think it was in the under 8 timeout came at like the 4:58 mark or something like that.
And right. Yeah.
Stevie Mitchell just looking completely gassed, but yeah, I mean, Marquette looked solidly in control in the whole game and gotta say, I called out Cam and Stevie and Oso in earlier in this pod from a Villanova game perspective. Those guys made a huge difference in this game against Xavier, right? Like, I think this was probably Stevie Mitchell's maximum minutes this season, right?
Feels like it. I mean, maybe he got more in some of the blowouts, or maybe some, you know, some of the bye games. But I felt like Stevie had like some low key, really quality minutes. Yeah, you look at the box score, you see 60 minutes, 2 points, but just he had some hustle plays on defense. One that really sticks out was like off that missed free throw where he tipped the rebound back to Kerr, and like Kerr got it and got an extra two, so it ended up being like a 4 point trip for Marquette,
right,
because of his hustle on that one play. And yeah, great effort on defense. You know, there were some stretches where Kolick was sitting, and you know, the team didn't really drop off too much because of Stevie's effort. Like I said, it didn't really, it doesn't really show up in the box score. Like if you look at the box score, like, well, what did I miss here? But I agree with you that it was a low key, really quality game for Stevie.
Yeah, and like he's really, I have to say, I think he's kind of turning in to a little bit, at least on the defensive end, starting to reflect a little bit of like Daryl Morsell, right? Like there was one play against Paul Scruggs where Scruggs had Mitchell in the post and was trying to back him down, and Scruggs is a senior, isn't he a fifth year senior? And Mitchell, being a true freshman, not only didn't give up the bucket, but like frustrated Scruggs to a rush shot that ended up in a Marquette rebound and a run out. And that was kind of the moment where I went, okay, I think we've got something here. I think, you know, maybe the offense will come to him later this season, or will come, you know, later in his career, but he clearly has the foundation to be just an absolute pest on the defensive end, regardless of who he's matching up. Someone quick, someone big, he can get it done for sure.
Yeah, and I forget who the Xavier player was, but the player, he was backing down Stevie for sure, and Stevie tried to draw a charge, and it looked like they probably should have, but that was the play when Cam came up with a loose ball, went the other way, and had that ridiculous reverse layup on the other end. Like, yes. Stevie kind of started that with his defense on the other end. So he started that, and that kind of leads me to my next point about, you know, it was another just wild roller coaster game for Cam Jones. Just some incredibly big shots. He had that amazing reverse layup, and of course he had the big three late that was essentially the dagger. And you know, Cam, he's a bit of a roller coaster ride sometimes, because he's gonna shoot, and that's fine, because when he gets going, when he's cooking, man, he is a lot of fun to watch, and he hit some big shots against Xavier.
Oh, absolutely, and he was just crazy. Like, I like to joke around. It started initially in an annoying way, calling him Leroy Jenkins. But that is 100%. That is a kid that just, he has utter confidence in himself. And like, you would not want to change that. Like that reverse layup on that breakaway. I was sitting there going, I had flashbacks to, who was it? Jarrell McNeil against, oh, I want to say it was St. John's or somebody like that in like 2005, 2006, where had a breakaway. We were up like two or something like that, and he went for a layup and got blocked, and instead of pulling it back out. And I thought Cam Jones was going to do the same, especially when I saw the defense rushing at him. But just the absolute nerve to like go to the hoop, reverse it, make the layup, and be like, yeah, what's up, man? And then, go ahead.
No, Cam Stones.
Yes.
As he's 100%. Been dubbed.
Yes.
I didn't come up with that. I want to say it was the Anonymous Eagle guys who came up with that. It was either Patrick or Ben, one of the two. But, yeah, I like Cam Stones.
Absolutely. I mean, that three-point shot, even if it doesn't go in, right? Like, because Marquette was just putting on an absolute clinic of passing that ball around and making the long pass to the open man. Like, it's that kind of precision. And this kind of leads to a larger point that maybe it doesn't make sense to make right now. But, like, this is a team that doesn't mentally beat itself, right? Like, they might get out physicaled, or they might get out strategied on a possession, or they, you know, somebody might make a great cut and Marquette doesn't cover it. But this is a team that is remarkable to me, that they do not make silly mistakes. They do not make mental mistakes. They might make a bad decision, or they might make you know, might make a physical mistake, but they're not like sitting here going, I don't know what to do. Like the number of times, like I can't remember a single incident this season where somebody's fallen asleep on the, when the opponent is inbounding, or, you know, somebody's going, you know, just goes completely the wrong way, or something like that. Right. Like, sure, there's miscommunications. Oso went ISO earlier in this game, and Daryl Morcel went to the bucket instead of staying out at the wing when Oso passed it. You know, so there's mistakes like that. But like, I just, and maybe this is too fine a point, but I just, it's remarkable the coaching on of this team, because they just do not make mistakes. Like, there are mental mistakes, right?
And that's what we kind of expected from this team, with, just because they were young, not because we didn't like the players or didn't like the talent or didn't like the coaching staff. But that's one reason why we really, you know, tempered expectations coming into this season, was because, look, there's too much youth, and youth makes mistakes. And we kind of maybe thought that's where the way it was going to go with some of those early losses to Xavier and to Creighton. Say, yeah, well, you know, youth cost us this game. Or we go to Madison and say, well, you know, you can't win on the game, a road game like that when you're too young. The youth has not shown over the last 5-6 games. It's been pretty great, actually. And, yeah, I think it's a credit to both the players and, like you said, to the coaching staff. They're getting these guys prepared. Yeah, you see a lapse here and there. I mean, this team's far from perfect. But it's not, to your point, it's not the routine chronic mistakes time after time that you would expect from a team that plays this many freshmen and sophomores. Or, you know, the way they're classified, they're like 8 freshmen on the team. But you know what I mean.
Bottom line, they're young, you're right.
No matter how you're going to spin it. But we're not getting the mistakes you would typically expect from a team this young.
Yeah, and the other crazy thing about it is KenPom is weird, because it indicates, it uses red to color, which usually indicates not great. But like, what's mind-boggling to me, for such a young team, the fact that 66% of their buckets, made baskets, are assisted. Like that, and that's like what, 6th in the country for that stat. Like, this is a team that shares, makes the extra pass, and like, there are no individual, like, you know, Justin Lewis might take over a game, right? Or Daryl Morcel will take over a game to a certain extent. But it's not like ISO, clear out, I'm going to drive and score or shoot and score. This is, you know, team, spread the ball around, get it to the right person in an advantageous position, and let them get to work, right? So I think that is a huge stat for me, especially with the team this young, is that they are just seeing they are seeing the game really, really well right now, and we're seeing the results on the court as a result.
Yeah, I think the assist rate has definitely also come from the emphasis on getting more quality shots, which maybe we didn't see as much in the first month of the season. But as they realized how poor their shooting percentage was as they got into December, we've definitely noticed a shift in the offense of getting paint touches and creating more quality open looks. And that's led to an increase in shooting percentage. That's led to the three-point percentage. Now, it's bordering on top 100 in the country right now. It's number one in the Big East. But those numbers have been going up. And even in the Sunday game, I know, you know, they missed a bunch of threes in the first, say, 5-10 minutes, but I wasn't as upset about that as I was maybe the three-point shooting in the first month of the season, because I thought they were getting quality looks. They just weren't falling. And so, like, I wasn't like, whereas maybe in the first month of the season I would be like, oh, stop shooting threes, you're killing me. I didn't feel like that in the game on Sunday. I just thought, hey, you know, they're just missing a few. They're getting good looks. And I think that's just the evolution of the offense. And they are doing a great job creating good looks. And that's where all those assists you're talking about come from.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and no one's benefited more from that than Justin Lewis. Because, I mean, we got to talk about, like, you know, his overall shooting percentage from three is up to 32%, but his conference only shooting from three is 38%. Like, if I had told you going into conference play that Justin Lewis was going to have 38% from three, would you have believed me?
No, I would not.
I mean...
Yeah, I mean, probably not. Yeah, probably not.
I mean...
He's shown it, but, like, I just didn't see it coming this year.
Well, I think he's shown an ability to shoot generally, but, like, on a game-to-game basis, I don't know that he shot, like, significantly, right? Like, I just always assumed he was going to be a 27 to 31, 32% three-point shooter. Now, maybe he's hot right now. You know, he's certainly shooting at volumes, right? His last three games, he's gone. He went 2 for 5 against Seton Hall, 5 for 8 from, you know, against Villanova, and then 4 for 7 from Xavier, right? Like, so that's a pretty hot three game stretch overall. But like, 38% is still not nothing in conference play, right? Like,
38% is keep shooting. If you are shooting 38%, just keep shooting. That right. Like, if you keep that up, all good.
And I think it speaks to, in part, like, his improvement, right? Like, he is physically doing the work to get better at his shot. But I also think that this team is just doing a better job overall, not just with Justin, but overall, just getting people shot, like, getting people into positions where shots are reasonable, right? Like, the number of Tyler Kolek is shooting a little bit better from three, but he's also taking a lot fewer threes. And when he does, they're almost never from a moving, like, they're a set shot versus, you know, a dribble into the shot type of thing.
Yeah, he was very rarely off the dribble and almost always a set shot, right? Catch and shoot. And like, when he's doing that, I feel much better about him when he's shooting them. Absolutely.
Right. So this team is this may be things we're not used to, but this team is adjusting and adapting and finding its way with the players that they have and the style that they have, right? Like, you know, and again, I think there's some value to the coaching staff is not panicking over certain things. Like, you and I or any other fans might be like, oh my God, our offensive rebounding and defensive rebounding is atrocious. And it's like, we got to do nothing but work on that. And I'm sure they're probably like, hey, we should rebound somewhat better. But they're also not like panicking and throwing the kitchen sink at it, right? And in spite of being not great at rebounding, this team is finding ways to win.
Yeah, interesting. The take my money I came up with at the last minute before the Xavier game was something that kind of come up in our group chat with the Crack Sidewalks and Anonymous Eagle and Paint Touches guys was the coaching staff realizes that they give up a lot of rebounds, but they try to make up for it in turnovers. So the stat that was kind of thrown at us was if the turnovers outweigh offensive rebounds. So that was the challenge on Sunday, was more turnovers for Xavier than offensive rebounds. And that's what happened. They did get more. Ended up being something like 10-6, something like that. 10 yep. turnovers for Xavier to 6 offensive rebounds.
It was 8 offensive rebounds, but.
Yeah, it was a little closer than that. But the point is, they hit the mark, and that's maybe kind of a formula. So, yeah, you would love to get more rebounds, of course, but there are ways to make up for it. Offensive rebounding percentage is one of the 4 factors on KenPom, but so is turnover percentage. So while it is one of the factors, you don't have to necessarily win it to win the game if you can do it better in other places, especially effective field goal percentage and turnover percentage, both offensively and defensively. And that's what Marquette's been doing. So I think that's a fun stat, maybe something I'll use again. Hell, I might use it this week. But by the way, Take My Money hit twice this week. So we're up to 10.
You're hitting your stride here, Joe.
It's starting to pile up, which is good to see. So I'll be making a little donation to the Blue and Gold Fund at the end of the season. And anyone else who's playing along, I don't know if anyone else is, but anyone else who's playing along, you will be too. So that's fun.
Yeah. Well, and you know, hey, listen, if you hit all your shots, there are fewer rebounds you have to worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why effective field goal percentage is king. If you get nothing else right, get the effective field goal percentage correct. And quite frankly, that's what Marquette's done.
Yep. Now the question, Phil, is will they continue to do it? The gauntlet continues. They've been managing it quite well so far. 3-0 in the 7-game gauntlet, in which they were expected to go 0-7, and we hoped they would go 2-5. They've already gotten 3, so it's house money at this point, right, Phil?
Right.
Like, you can stomach 4 straight losses if it comes to that, but the way they've been playing, I think it's almost getting too pessimistic to expect 4 straight losses. But I think it's also, I've joked before about the Providence and the nosebleed factor. Well, when you get too high, at some point you're bound to come back down. So you kind of feel like maybe a loss is coming somewhere, and that's okay. Like, you can stomach it because you've built up enough goodwill with these past 6 games that Marquette could stomach a loss or 2 or 3 over the next few games here. So is another loss coming this week? Yay or nay? What do you think?
I feel like one has to come, right? Like, I think we're just flying a little too high. Now, temper that with, I did a little, if people aren't using Bart Tvorak, I strongly encourage it. They have a feature called TeamCast where you can basically project the results of the season, and then you can do it'll project where they fall in terms of the bracket, right? Like, so they can, you know, say, oh, you're going to be a 7th seed if these results hold true or whatever. So I was playing around with it while we were recording here. If Marquette loses every game except Georgetown, Butler, DePaul, and St. John's, and assuming they don't play that miss St. John's game, which I hope we don't, so if they only win 4 out of the next 10, and the 4 that they win are the 4 worst left on the schedule, Marquette still is one of the teams playing in Dayton, right? So, like, I mean, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I just don't see this team going 4-6 the rest of the way. I think the reverse is much more likely. I do think a loss is coming this week. I think we just have to come back to center a little bit. But we'll see. Maybe we get 2 this week and then lose 1 or 2 next week. Next week is the even, or 2 weeks from now is the even harder one, with Villanova at home and then UConn on the road. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Do you see a loss coming this week?
Yeah, I think there's going to be one coming, but yeah, I think if I'm going to pick one, yeah, I think I'd say maybe Seton Hall's probably got one waiting for us when we get to Newark, because they're pissed off about the way that game went in Milwaukee, and they are a tough matchup for Marquette the way they rebound. The rebounds almost cost them the game the first time around, but Marquette was able to pull that one out. I think they can handle Providence. I mean, they destroyed them the first time in Milwaukee. Right. Now, you expect Providence to bounce back, but Providence has by far had the softest Big East schedule. Yes, as we sit here tonight, they are in first place in the Big East. But they beat Connecticut, who was missing a guy, missing Sanogo. Seton Hall was missing, I forget who it was, but Seton Hall was missing a key player when they played Seton Hall. And then their other Big East wins are DePaul, St. John's, Georgetown, and Butler.
Right.
So,
I mean, like, their current conference strength of schedule, to your point, is 11th. Right? Yeah. They're currently 6-1 in conference, but they've played the 11th hardest schedule in conference. Now, I ask you, how many teams are in the Big East?
That would be 11, Phil.
11. So they have played the easiest conference schedule to date and are 6-1. Good for them. To be fair, Marquette has played the 6th easiest or the 6th hardest conference schedule. So, middle of the pack. You know, we've beat up on some easy teams, certainly. I'm of two minds. Like, I feel like a loss needs to be coming. I don't really think it's coming from Providence, because I think Providence is a little bit of a paper tiger, right? They could very well win. Winning on the road in the Big East is hard. But, like, so I would normally say I'm with you that I feel like Seton Hall is where the loss comes, especially given, you know, Kevin Willard's aneurysm in the last game. Having said that, though, some of the chat folks have made a good point. Seton Hall's going to be playing their 3rd game in 5 days when they play us. That's a lot. And they have to play St. John's twice. So you're playing St. John's twice, plus Marquette, who presses. Seton Hall's going to have some dead legs.
Well, I guess on the plus side, St. John's is at least a local game.
That's true.
That's one you drive to. So it's not like they got to get on a plane for those games. But still, you are playing. That is something to be said for playing. I mean, that's a rivalry game for Seton Hall, playing right. St. John's. So, but a lot of games, because they're doing some makeup games, right, because of St. Right. John's COVID situation, and I guess their own COVID situation, too. So that is an advantage if they've got some tired legs. So who knows? Let's capitalize on the situation and maybe get two more. The first game against Seton Hall, obviously Marquette won that one. Gripe about the late foul call if all you want, but we touched on that quite a bit in the last podcast. Bottom line is they won, and I'm just not sure the calls are going to go that way this time around, and the rebounding is a concern for me. So if I have to pick where our loss is coming, I would say the Wednesday game against Seton Hall. But, I still think they can get Providence, though. Just because, I mean, they manhandled Providence the first time. You know, and is... Who was it was missing the first time for Providence?
Reeves. A.J. Reeves.
Yeah,
A.J.
Reeves. Yeah, Reeves was missing. So, again, like you said, does adding him plus a home court advantage flip at 30 points? I don't know, maybe. 32 points, but maybe not. I think Marquette can go into the dunk and win that one. I assume that's the dunk.
Yeah, they don't have another venue. But like, yeah,
make sure they didn't change it. All these names change all the time. So
that's true. That's a fair point. But yeah, and Seton Hall's got Providence got to play Xavier Wednesday night. You know, so it's on the road, right? So they're traveling to Cincinnati and then coming back. So again, I think I couldn't tell you which game's going to be a loss. I feel like a loss is coming. But I don't know. Maybe I haven't completed my Wojo cleanse. Maybe this string keeps going, and the obvious losses are the Nova UConn game, and we get two more this week. I mean, you get two more this week, and I don't even know. I don't have time to do the Tvorak during this call, but like, I don't know. You beat Seton Hall and Providence both on the road. At that point, you're pretty much a lock, right? Almost regardless rest of the season.
I think Marquette would be in like the 5-6 line probably in bracketologies across the internet webs. I mean, when you're projected that high, you're a lock, man. I mean, that is lock status. Yeah, if they win both, yeah, lock it in. They're in the tournament. Not only in the tournament, we're talking seeding and maybe getting to a game where Marquette would be the favorite, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves, maybe a little bit, but not too much.
I feel like we've actually been underselling it. Like, that's the thing that's tough for me is like, I want to like hold back a little bit, but I almost feel like optimistic Phil should just become Phil. I don't know that this is being optimistic. This is like reality is starting to match what we hope for, I mean, right?
We should give this team its due, right? Give them some credit. I mean, if a Marquette basketball podcast can give these guys some credit and hype them up a little bit, I don't know who's going to do it.
Right.
So, these guys are playing some great ball right now. And, heck, yeah, I think they are dang near a lock for the tournament. They just got to take care of business the rest of the way. That may or may not include a win or two over the next 2 weeks. And there's plenty of winnable games down the stretch. So you have to feel great about this team. Hopefully they keep growing, keep improving, and we'll be in a great spot hopefully in March, and maybe have the good vibes. I just don't want them to go away, Phil. I'm enjoying the good vibes.
Oh, I am loving the vibes, and I'm just loving the kind of the swagger of the team, right? And like, they're not overly excitable, but they're like I don't know if you saw it on TV, but in the game when Daryl Morcel had that layup that. You know, Cam Jones was certainly the dagger, but the layup before then, when right before the foul where Morcel kind of flopped on top of Scruggs unnecessarily going for a jump ball, but that layup, he like absolutely flexed at the bench and was like, "Hey, we're here, we're gonna win this game." And I was like, "This is swag that I have not seen out of a Marquette team in quite a number of years," and it absolutely is just. Fantastic that we're here in the year one of Shaka.
Ahead of schedule. Let's keep going. Let's stay ahead of schedule. That's the important thing. Ahead of schedule now. Let's not fall back behind schedule. Stay ahead of schedule.
Correct.
And I don't want to talk about it this week, Phil, but I'll say this. if Marquette does win two games this week, you know what I want to talk about next week?
Ooh, what?
Winning the Big East.
Ooh, that's true. That
if Marquette wins two games this week, winning the league might be on the table.
Correct.
It's going to be in the mix. Correct. But again, we got a long way to go there. A long way to go.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just see what happens this week.
Anything could happen, right? Like, but, I mean, this team is just playing at a – I think the big thing for me is I'm with you where you're like, all right, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. But the thing is, this is entirely sustainable, right? Because, yes, the offense has been good. Maybe three-point shots go cold or what have you, right? But Marquette's defense, again, they weren't exactly lighting up the scoreboard against Villanova, but they held Villanova to 3 points in the last 9 minutes at home, right? And they held Xavier, who's one of the top scoring offenses in the Big East. They were a top 25 offense, and they held them to 11 points in the last 12 minutes of the game. That is entirely sustainable.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a fluke. It doesn't feel lucky,
right?
Or something that like is really going to totally disappear. Like, I'm not saying they're going to win all the rest of their games. I'm just saying I don't think the way they're playing is just going to evaporate. Like,
right.
As long as you know, knock on wood, you stay away from injuries, right?
Right.
As long as the team stays healthy as they are right now, I just don't see the way they're playing right now to totally just vanish. And
right.
just a week or two from now, we're wondering what the hell happened.
I mean, again, this is getting way ahead of ourselves. But is there argument to be made that come Big East tournament and when awards are given out, is Shaka in line for Big East Coach of the Year?
Sure. Why not? I think the funny thing is, like, the guy who wins the league almost never wins that. Because guys like Jay Wright and Bill Self and Mike Krzyzewski and Tom Izzo, like, they never win Coach of the Year because they're always expected to win the league, and they do. It's like, well, you know what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Right? Like, the guy who wins Big East Coach of the Year is always the guy who has a team predicted 8th, 9th, 10th, and finishes 3rd, 4th, 5th. Right?
Right.
Something like that. And so, like, that is perfectly described Shaka right now. So, yes, there is certainly a very, very realistic scenario where Shaka would win Big East Coach of the Year. Because, again, Jay Wright almost would never win it. Because if you're picked one in the preseason and you win the league, that's not a formula for Coach of the Year. Maybe it should be, but it never happens that way. Like, Hall of Fame coaches never win Coach of the Year.
Right. Right. And I get it. Like, that makes sense, right? Like, it feels a little unfair, right? If you meet or exceed your expectation, you should be awarded, you know, because you won the Big East. But, you know, but still.
It's always the guy everybody was wrong about in the preseason.
Right,
that's the guy who wins Big East Coach of the Year.
It's almost like the journalists are voting to overcome their incompetence, right? Oh, yep, we didn't see this coming, so we got to vote this guy Coach of the Year because, you know, incompetence.
Yeah, any conference, by the way, not just Big East.
Right, right.
Like, any conference or, like, maybe the National Coach of the Year tends to go to a guy who's really, really good, like, you know, a Mark Few or a Scott Drew or something like that. But still, the Coach of the Year is kind of guy who did the most with what was perceived to be the least, or a guy who vastly outperformed wherever they were picked in the preseason. That's who wins Coach of the Year. So yeah, I could 100% see Shaka winning Coach of the Year. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I'm here for it. Like, I mean, honestly, this has been, I harped on it a little bit at the last podcast, but I think the big thing for me this week that has really drawn my attention is how much, like, this, like, Shaka coaches. Let's take it back to an NFL analogy, because I'm sure you'd love to go back and revisit the Chiefs win again. But, like,
oh, can we?
I sure. Hey, that we got time left on the end of this podcast. But no. But seriously, like, in the NFL, they'd say, hey, we coach Monday through Friday, and we just manage the games on Sundays, right? I think that's a big thing that's going on with Shaka. Like, you never hear. You remember when Wojo would talk about, oh, hey, our defense plays better on, you know, in the first half because it's by our bench so we can talk to him better. Like,
yeah.
Like, that always caught me as kind of crazy. You don't see that. It's not like you're seeing a first half, second half. Like, these players are well-coached. They know what to do. You know, sure, Shaka is yelling instructions, calling plays. You know, we saw that on the All Access against DePaul. But, like, this is a team that has its head in the right place, and they know what they're supposed to be doing. They're not relying on the staff telling them what to do. You know, during a game, they've got that figured out while they're actually playing the game. And again, that is what is sustainable. And I think that is what is so critical about, you know, the job Shaka has done, is that he is coaching these players to be ready for a March type scenario. And I, quite frankly, I'm getting excited, a little too excited, but still, yeah, I'm getting excited.
And that's also why you bring in Morcell and Queth, right?
Right.
Two veteran defensive-minded players.
Right.
Like, and I think that certainly helped to sustain what you're talking about, that the team knows their assignments and they're not lost when they can't hear Shaka.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. So Daryl Morcell has now hit more threes at Marquette than he did in his entire campaign, like his entire career at Maryland. How much of that is like Daryl just improving for himself? How much is Maryland underutilizing him? How much is Shaka and the coaching staff developing him? Right? Like that is just like, the crazy in-season development and the year-over-year development with some of these players is pretty remarkable. And if this is going to be the norm at Marquette, holy cow, like, boy, like,
yeah,
this is going to be some good times ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a lot, all those factors you mentioned kind of go into it. Maybe Morcell was a little underutilized, but he's also worked his butt off to improve, and he's found a team and a coach that believes him, is going to let him thrive. So I think that all of the above, but yes.
Yeah.
And who knows what this coaching staff can do with the other players on the roster. Like, all these other guys, they may have 3-4 more years with all of them. So, oh boy.
Yeah.
Could be a lot of fun.
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, one thing I did want to touch, I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because I think we've talked for almost long enough, but I think it was cool just to bring up briefly the Marquette Hall of Fame induction over the weekend.
Yep, the end of the club.
With Tom Crean and Dominic James both there, you know, there were some other sports there honored as well. But you know, for the sake of this podcast, I just love seeing those two guys honored, especially Crean, who, you know, there was certainly a lot of bitterness among the fan base when he left, as there is anytime any coach leaves a program. But I think, from what I could tell from the Twitter reaction and what I saw on TV, it seemed like he was very well received.
Absolutely.
And it seemed like a cool ceremony. And so I thought that was really cool to see.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I think he was very well received. I think, you know, I may be reading a little too much into it, but I feel like he was touched by the reception, right? Like, I think it was just kind of one of these, like you said, like there's always going to be some, you know, like, you know, not well, like there's always going to be some hard feelings when a coach leaves, no matter what the situation or circumstances are, right? Like, that's just how life is. But I think time has healed those wounds, and you know, Wojo and Buzz have made us go, wasn't that bad, right? Like, okay, great, he went to Indiana, cool.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't,
yeah,
it wasn't, go ahead.
You know, yeah, and I feel also great for Crean because I know he's having a tough year, and I think the writing's kind of on the wall that he's going to get fired at Georgia at the end of this season, which I hate that for him. But so I think in that regard, this was a nice little break for him.
Yes.
To just kind of celebrate himself a little bit because, I mean, who knows? He may not coach again.
Right.
He may just get into broadcasting, and this may be it for him because I don't know what the next stop for him would be, that a job that is good enough that he would want to go there and also, you know, like, pays enough that he would want to go there, but, you know, is the right spot for him.
So I
kind of hate that for him.
Yeah, but he can be the next Steve Lavin, right? Like, you know, I'm not saying Steve Lavin is the standard for him, but, like, go get a good-paying job that, like, you can be home on, you know, on evenings, and, You know, no reason to continue to do the hustle.
Yeah, be a broadcaster. I mean, I'm not saying he could be this good, but Bill Raftery was a coach.
Right.
Long time ago, right? And then he got into, broadcasting. Now he's a great. And, you know, I think if Tom Crean wants to have a long broadcasting career, I think he would be great at it. He was very good on that year. I guess it was just 1 year when he was at ESPN. I thought he was really good. And I think he could be very good at it for many years, as long as he wants. He's got enough money. He doesn't have to go into broadcasting. He could just retire and be happy with his wife and kids and enjoy their lives. But it was good for him to just kind of have a fun weekend and just be appreciated in front of the Marquette fans. So I thought that was great to see. And, hey, I don't want to leave out Dominic James. I love Dominic James.
Oh, absolutely.
He was so fun to watch. I threw out on Twitter, I think he might be my favorite Marquette player who never played a minute in the NBA.
Yep.
I think he is number one because, you know, Travis Diener, he played in the NBA. Jarrell McNeil played in the NBA. DJO played in the NBA. And now, you know, obviously some of the all-time greats at Marquette did. But if you, like, limit it to guys who never played a minute, I threw that out there on Twitter, and I got some good responses. Like, Tony Miller is a favorite among a lot of others. Devontae Gardner made that list for a lot of people. Kubion was a good pick by some people as favorite. But, for me, it's Dominic James. I just always love the little guy who can jump. Dominic is like 5'10", and he could throw it down with anyone else. Like, in his prime, he could throw it down as well as anybody. He was so fun, and I thought it was cool to see him honored on Sunday as well.
Yeah, absolutely. One other name I would throw out there is Cordell Henry.
Yes, I love Cordell.
I mean, just from an attitude and a skill set, right? But yes, absolutely. Dominic James was a favorite. You know, obviously that's our era, so we're a little biased. But yeah,
he was a big part of turning the page after Wade. Too.
Yes,
like you had the Final Four in 2003 with Wade, then he went pro. Then he had a couple tough years when Marquette was in the NIT, and then he was a part of that new class. It was James McNeil and Matthews.
The big three. Yep.
And Dwight Burke. And, you know, that group just kind of led the next generation, and that was their freshman year was the first year in the Big East. That was Steve Novak's senior year. And that group just vastly overachieved. Maybe in some ways the same way this team is. But, you know, there wasn't a new coach, though. But it's still – Dominic James and his class. Dominic was the best player in the group his freshman year. Now, maybe by the end, Jarrell McNeil was the best player because he was the all-time leading scorer, and Wesley Matthews ended up being the best NBA player in that group. But James was the best their freshman year. And like his efforts that year kind of showed us, hey, there's life after Wade. We could be good again without Dwayne Wade.
Right.
He kind of led that charge.
Correct. It was proof that Tom Crean was not just a coach built on Wade.
Yeah, and that's the last thing I want to throw out about Crean, a thing I love to throw out. Of Marquette's top 10 all-time leading scorers, he recruited and signed 5 of them.
Yeah.
And then he coached a 6th. So, like, he coached McNeil, who's 2nd, Dominic James, who's 3rd. He also signed Travis Diener. He signed Lazar Hayward. Lazar Hayward's 3rd, sorry. It's Dominic James, it's 5th. So he signed McNeil, Lazar, Dominic James, Travis Diener, Wesley Matthews. You notice I didn't mention Wade or Steve Novak in that group. And then he coached Brian Wardle. Wardle was with the previous coaching staff, and Wardle is also in the top 10. So 6 guys in the top 10 played under Tom Crean. Crean signed 5 of them, and that does not include Marquette's best pro ever in Dwayne Wade and Steve Novak, a guy who played 14 years in the league. Unbelievable, sustained success thanks to Tom Crean's recruiting. So that's the last thing I love to throw out about him.
Absolutely. And again, the reception was great. It was good to have him back. I will say one other anecdote from being in the arena. I doubt they showed it on TV, but at some point they on the Jumbotron they flashed up to they were introducing players that were back, etc. And they had the 2003 Final Four team in there. Obviously Dwayne Wade wasn't there, but you know, it was Robert Jackson was in there. Joe Chapman was in there. Steve Novak was in there. And then, as I affectionately refer to him, Mr. Miller Lite, Travis Diener, did not disappoint, because as soon as they were on camera, he immediately held up his 16-ounce Miller Lite and took a swig. So Travis keeps on travising, and I love it. I'm here for it.
Never change. Absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. All right, it's about time to wrap up this podcast. On the record, I think I'm going to go with 1-1 this week. I'm going to say they lose at Seton Hall, and that snaps the winning streak, but they bounce back and they beat Providence. That's going to be my call for the week.
I'm going to go with 1-1-2. I'm unwilling to commit to a specific game that they lose, but they're going to lose one. I just don't know which one.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed the offensive rebounding turnover head-to-head for Take My Money on Sunday. So I'm going to do that again against Seton Hall, just because the offensive rebounding was such a problem against Seton Hall. So you got to try to limit that and also force some turnovers to make up for it. So that's going to be my formula for Seton Hall. And then I think I'm going to go with the 32 deflections. That's a kind of a go-to. Force turnovers, just frustrate them and just beat them into oblivion with defense. So those are going to be the two Take My Monies for this week. First, I'm going to do turnovers over offensive rebounds against Seton Hall, and then 32 deflections against Providence, although that may be tougher to track on the road. So something to change, but that's what I'm leaning towards.
I like it. I think both are good good choices and will make for interesting Take My Money tracking.
10 on the year. Let's keep it going. Hey, if you want to hit us up on Twitter and give us your feedback, I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23 Cracked Sidewalks is the team handle. You go to CrackSidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave your comments there if you are not on Twitter. You can also go and rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That's where we are. You can listen to the podcast there. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page if you enjoy that. And also hit me up if you would like to talk about Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. I welcome all that as well.
Oh, Joe, you're just living the dream. I think that's the note we end on. You are living the dream.
I feel like I'm just, I don't know. Things are going well sports-wise for me. Like, the pandemic has been brutal, but, you know, low-key, it's been kind of fun for me sports-wise. It really has.
You know what? God doesn't give with both hands, right? Like, he gives the pandemic, like, you know, but then he gives Joe all the sports victories he can handle.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe, you got to stay in your house and be alone for the rest of your life. But, hey, you get to watch the Braves win the World Series, the Chiefs go to the Super Bowl again, and Marquette is good at basketball again. So, you know, yeah, give and take. Give and take.
You know what? Whatever the devil offered you, worth it.
Until next time, everybody, seashells and balloons.